going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 29. It's entitled Explanation of Devotional Service. And we're going to read two verses, text 24, text 25. Start with some quiz questions. Fill in the blank. Lord Kapila Dev is known for propounding blank. Sankhya philosophy. Okay, next question. Question number two. There's a primary means or yoga dharma especially effective for delivering perfection of life in each of the four yugas. And for Sadhya Yuga, that process is meditation. Question three. Kapila Dev manifested himself in this world during blank yuga. Which yuga? Satya Yuga. Question four. How do these two fit together? He taught Sankhya philosophy. That's what he's known for. And the means of achieving spiritual perfection is meditation. How do the two fit together? That's an essay question. That's fill in the blank. And then, to make it even more interesting, question number five. In this section of Lord Kapila Dev's teachings, there's four chapters dealing with devotional service, which is bhakti yoga, not dhyana yoga. So how does that fit into the picture? Well, although they're different yoga systems, and one may speak of something as being prominent, like a philosophical yoga system, because that's what Sankhya is, it needs to, if properly understood, it leads to devotional service. And meditation, if engaged in properly, it leads to devotional service. All roads lead to Rome, right? All the rungs of the yoga ladder lead to the topmost rung. They're aspects of the topmost rung, in one sense. You look at the holistic picture. The essence of all the Vedas is what? To know Krishna. Krishna says that, right? Vedaishta sayarvayar aham eva vedyo. So the purpose of all the Vedas, the essence of all the Vedas, is to know Krishna. And the way to know Krishna? Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. The way to know Krishna is through bhakti. So Sankhya is an aspect of bhakti. Dhyana is an aspect of bhakti. They're not... There may be some emphasis on just as Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita. Some emphasis on Sankhya. Correct? Chapter 2. Little section, chapter 7. Whole of chapter 13. Sankhya. It's an aspect of. It's a subset of. That's a nice mathematical term. Subsets. You know what that term means in terms of math? Subset. This is within that. If you have $1 million, you have $100. $100 is a subset of $1 million. It's already within it. Subset. They're subsets. They're rungs on the yoga ladder. So he's teaching Sankhya philosophy, and the purpose of that Sankhya philosophy is to discriminate between matter and spirit. We belong to the category of spirit. Then, at the end of that whole chapter 26 on very complicated Sankhya, it ends with, fix your mind. This individual soul should fix his mind upon the Supreme Soul. Meditation. And then the purpose of that meditation is also to engage in unmixed, undivided, pure devotional service. So that's the answer to those two questions, is how they fit into the picture of bhakti. And then here is another one. this section, the cluster of verses is describing deity worship. What's deity worship doing in Satya Yoga? I thought it was meditation. We know what meditation is. You go to a quiet place and sit down and have closed eyes, just like it says in chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, at the tip of the nose and controlling the breathing process, and so the mind is peaceful. That's meditation. Deity worship is also meditation. Deity worship is also an anga of bhakti. Five most potent ones, and it doesn't describe meditation. Deity worship is, those who have done deity worship know very well, it's meditation. You're serving the form of the Lord. Like that nice description, very often quoted, lovely description, in Nectar Devotion, with reference to a scriptural explanation of an elderly brahmana. Because of his age, he was unable to, after some years, to do his deity worship. He heard from scripture that one can worship the Lord in one's mind, and so he did that. In his mind, that's if you can't do your deity worship, by the way. In his mind, he went to the forest, he gathered fantastic flowers and ointments, you know, ingredients to make ointments to place on the body of the deity and bathe the deity in sacred waters. And yeah, so the bathing and dressing, and then he was making the preparations within his mind, gathering the best of ingredients to make the offering to his deity. Don't attend Mangal Arati in that way. But, or do your deity worship that we worship your deity with the senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. But he was elderly and unable to do those things physically, so he, in his mind. And then when he was testing sweet rice, he put his thumb in the sweet rice and the thumb burned. His meditation broke. He had a burned thumb and he was in ecstasy. Because the deity was accepting his worship. Although it was his gross physical senses weren't engaged, his mind, the sixth sense, was engaged. And therefore the subtle senses were similarly engaged. So when doing deity worship, when you can physically do deity worship, whether it's Satya Yuga, as described here, or our age, Kali Yuga, we engage in deity worship, although the primary means is Nam Sankirtan. That's the Yuga Dharma. But we do deity worship, and an aspect or one way to think of deity worship is fixing the mind upon the form of the Lord and serving Him. So there's a description in this section about deity worship, and Kapila Dev's emphasis in deity worship is two things in relation to meditation. Pratak Bina is one phrase that's used. Seeing one is considered a separatist, that's how Prabhupada has translated it, if they worship the deity but don't see the supreme personality of Godhead within the heart of other living beings. There's many sections in the Bhagavatam. This is one that's describing the beginning, intermediate, advanced, Kanishta, Madhyama, Uttama stages of bhakti. And in the Kanishta stage, characteristic of all religions, God is in the place of worship. So they revere the mosque or the temple or the synagogue or the church or the place where God is. They go to the place where God is and they're very reverential and they offer prayers and so forth. If you could all move forward a little bit, that would be Nice. Thank you very much. So, not seeing God is within the temple, but not God is everywhere. So then that's another term that's a modern term is secularism. Secular is there's God and then there's worldly life and they're distinct. And I do things for God and then I do my duties to my family and my country and my community. So they're separate. And I do this and it enriches that. Makes me prosper over here because I do this. It's a Kanishka stage. So Kapila Deva is saying he doesn't use the word Kanishka, but he calls them they're separatists. He identifies it's in the mode of ignorance because they're ignoring the Supreme Lord. And then there are those that worship the deity. Let me just a couple of the verses, and then this morning's verse. Yeah. First starts a philosophical statement, and then examples in practice and practical application of the philosophical statement. So text 20, we're going to start going into detail on text 24, but 20 through 23, just the translations. As a chariot of air carries an aroma from its source and immediately catches the sense of smell, similarly, one who constantly engages in devotional service in Krishna consciousness can catch the super soul who is equally present everywhere. 21. I am present in every living entity as the super soul. If someone neglects or disregards that super soul everywhere and engages himself in the worship of the deity in the temple, that is simply imitation. Vidambanam. Imitation. Vidambanam. That is simply imitation. Text 22. One who worships the deity of Godhead in the temples but does not know that the Supreme Lord as Paramatma is situated in every living entity's heart must be in ignorance and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. Swaha. Because the ghee is offered to the flame. And the flame is like the tongue or the mouth of Lord Vishnu. But offer oblations into ashes, there's no result from a Vedic point of view. For the purpose of the yajna point of view, the mantras may be there, the paraphernalia is there. The ghee is there, the spoon's there, all the decorations are there. Swaha. So that's deity worship where one doesn't recognize the Supreme Lord is everywhere. Commonly Prabhupada would say it in reverse. People will criticize, why do you worship the deity? There's some people. God is everywhere. So that person, Prabhupada would say, I ask them, if God is everywhere, why is he not in the deity? What's your problem? Worshipping the deity helps us to understand God is everywhere. And then this is, if one worships the deity but doesn't see God everywhere, then it's simply imitation. It's like offering oblations into ashes. And so the explanation given in the purport is, if God is everywhere and you're worshiping the deity, you're offering things to the deity, then you should distribute prasad. or deity worship is incomplete. It's a little softer than oblations into ashes or imitation or separatist. It makes it complete. Without it, it's incomplete. Because why? Because that deity that you're worshiping, that's a form of the Lord, but the Lord is within the heart of every living entity. So to respect the Lord, we respect him by distributing his prasad to everyone. One who offers, this is text 23, one who offers me respect but is envious of the bodies of others, dvishita, dvesha, right? You're averse to others or envious of others, dvishita, and is therefore a separatist, bina darshanaha. You don't see the person in relation to the Supreme Lord. You only see something else. So the soul, Prabhupada makes this point, the soul and the super soul both are within the heart of the living entity, not just a body moving around. It's the soul animating the body, and there's a super soul within the heart of that soul. And both are there. So not seeing that as the separatist, it leads to dveshita, feeling enmity or envy or ill feelings of different types towards other living beings. And you're worshipping the deity or engaging in devotional service. So it's the language is strong, and it happens predominantly, like more than it doesn't happen, that we're in the practice stage, in the Kanishta stage, where we're practicing devotional service. We want to come to the higher stage, but we're not there yet. So we're practicing to get to the higher stage. So one should know what the higher stage is and aspire for that higher stage. See the Supreme Lord within. And, you know, part of it is the Sankhya system, and part of it is the meditation system, part of it is the deity worship itself. When engaging in deity worship, it's purifying. And in that purification, where does it take one? Consciousness-wise. Seeing the Supreme Lord within. The same Supreme Lord within all living beings. Elevated consciousness. But that's the result of purification. The purification of devotional service. In other words, we should not just mechanically do. It's good you do. As Prabhupada said, better to do than to not do. If one makes offerings to the deity, we'll hear this, Prabhupada will say, if you make offerings to the deity instead of just eating, that's good. But then you make offerings to the deity, it should be distributed. That's indicate, and why? Well, one is you because that's what you should do. But another is because the Supreme Lord is within. It's a vehicle to take one. It's a process that can carry one to the realization. That's the process for Satya Yuga. What's that against? Meditation. It's a process of meditation. Engaging the deity worship and distribute the prasad of the deity. Not just religiously, yes, but beyond religiously. You know, in Krishna consciousness, in devotion, in more complete as opposed to incomplete, as genuine as opposed to imitation, devotional service. It's just, then that's culture. Something that I noticed during Prabhupada's presence, he would regularly, when people would come to visit him before they would leave, he would have his servant without fail, just like religiously, meaning he was seeing super soul within his heart, he would make sure that they got some prasadam. And even if it was something very simple, he regularly, wherever he was traveling, and he
constantly traveled. On the corner of his desk was a jar of macadamia nuts. So it was really easy for the servant to give somebody. Macadamia nuts are nice, kind of like an opulent nut. So at least that, something. And where did he learn that? He learned that from his father, because his father engaged in deity worship, and anyone who came to the home received prasadam. And so he just continued. We all have fathers. Without exception, we all have fathers. And then there's our spiritual father, our founder Acharya, who's showing by his example. Whenever we have festivals or functions, it's distribution of prasadam. And then it has its practical aspect. I remember some description. It's in biographies of Prabhupada. Prabhupada was traveling in an airplane, and he was seated in one area, and those sannyasis, etc., that were hit part of his companionship, they were in another section. A priest came over to Prabhupada and said, "You know, Swamiji, how do you attract all these wonderful people? Our church is losing these people." And Prabhupada said, "Well, one thing you could do is serve very nice food." He understood, strategically, because he had first-hand experience at 26 Second Avenue preparing nice prasadam. And it's a fact, not only, regardless of the venue, the maximum attendance at our temples is when it's time for prasadam. They may come for the class and then take prasadam, or come for arti and take prasadam, or just come for prasadam. Or we have, anyway, at college programs or 26 Second Avenue, the beginning and the storefront, it's a smaller group of people, and slowly people come for different reasons, but, maximum. Anyway, it's not just a strategy, it's an expression. The higher is, it's an expression of devotion. It means to help one realize, fix the mind upon the personality of Godhead, so that in the course of all of our activities throughout the day, our mind is fixed upon the personality of Godhead. For us, the Yuga Dharma is the holy name and has the same purpose behind it. Jiva Goswami explains in his Bhakti Sandarbha, there's 9 processes of bhakti, but one is superlatively important, and that is chanting. All the other processes should be engaged together with chanting, and a whole long explanation, and scripturally and practically. But so the mind is fixed. And how do you fix the mind? It's chanchala. Arjuna says, Krishna confirms, and our experience says, 1, 2, 3, it's chanchala. So, by devotion, that's how it becomes fixed. When you become attached to something or someone, your attention goes to that something or someone. Generally, it's a problem. We have a problem. We don't have to, try to think of the problem. It just creeps into our consciousness and takes over because of attachment. So what would it be like if we were attached to Krishna? You think of Krishna. And so our Shravanam Kirtanam process is most effective. And then deity worship. And then with deity worship, we're getting this nice instruction. Don't just worship the deity and then be a bina darshanaha. Although commonly that's, from the sadhana stage, that's where we start from. That's okay. Keep going. Bhuteshu Badha Vairasya, inimical towards others. No friends and enemies. Us and them. So now, that's the prior verses. Here's 24:25. Carrying the message, it's not like a totally new message, just carrying the message in further detail. I'll read the verses and purports quickly. Text 24. My dear mother, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by the worship of my deities in the temple. Very strong. Purport. There are 64 different prescriptions for worship of the deity in the temple. That's in Nectar of Devotion. Now there's many more than 64. Those are 64 out of the many. Then Prabhupada writes, there are many items offered to the deity, some valuable and some less valuable, like a leaf or fruit or anything else. And then there's some that are more. It is prescribed in Bhagavad Gita, quote, if a devotee offers me a small flower, a leaf, some water, or a little fruit, I will accept it. The real purpose is to exhibit one's loving devotion to the Lord, semicolon. The offerings themselves are secondary. The item is not the essence, it's the love and devotion. That's the primary. If one has not developed loving devotion to the Lord and simply offers many kinds of foodstuffs, fruits and flowers, without real devotion, the offering will not be accepted by the Lord. Uh-oh. Of course, even the act of making the offering is itself an expression of some devotion, so Krishna will accept. But emphasis on devotion, please. Not just the items. We cannot bribe the personality of Godhead. He is so great that our bribery has no value, nor has he any scarcity, semicolon. Since he is full in himself, what can we offer him? Everything is produced by him. We simply offer to show our love and gratitude to the Lord. And then comes the prasadam distribution paragraph. This gratitude and love for God is exhibited by a pure devotee who knows that the Lord lives in every living entity. As such, temple worship necessarily includes distribution of prasad. It is not that one should create a temple in his private apartment or private room, offer something to the Lord, and then eat. Of course, that is better than simply cooking foodstuffs and eating without understanding one's relationship with the Supreme Lord. People who act in this manner are just like animals. Prabhupada can get away with saying such things. Really heavy. But scripture says such things. But the devotee who wants to elevate himself to the higher level of understanding must know that the Lord is present in every living entity, and as stated in the previous verse, one should be compassionate to other living entities. The devotee should worship the Supreme Lord, be friendly to persons who are on the same level, and be compassionate to the ignorant. One should exhibit his compassion for ignorant living entities by distributing prasad. Distribution of prasad to the ignorant masses of people is essential for persons who make offerings to the personality of Godhead. Not optional. Essential. And then the last is repeat. What's being accepted by the Supreme Lord is the love and devotion of the devotee. Of course, the article that's being offered becomes sanctified, but it's due to the love and devotion of the devotee that was making the offering. Similarly, we may offer many valuable items to the deity, but if we have no real sense of devotion and no real sense of the Lord's presence everywhere, then we are lacking in devotional service. In such a state of ignorance, we cannot offer anything acceptable to the Lord. It's pretty clear. And the final verse, text 25, performing his prescribed duties,
One should worship the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead until one realizes my presence in his own heart and in the hearts of other living entities as well. So that's kind of like, you know, it's really strong language, but then it's also it's a little softer in the sense that that's the standard, the gold standard, and until one comes to that standard, then one should continue to practice until one comes to that stage. So we should aspire for, be clear what the goal is and aspire for the goal. Even when engaged in these wonderful activities of such as deity worship. So again, what's kind of it's a goal or an essential element of the purpose of deity worship? Become attached to the Supreme Lord and recognize the reality, the truth, Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, that he is within the heart of every living being. And then actions should be accordingly. We do what those who have that at least understanding what this, you know, higher is, you can actually see the Supreme Lord within everyone. But at least the understanding the Supreme Lord is within everyone. And so this condition of being inimical towards others, envious towards others, separatist, those kind of negative terminologies, things that we may struggle with, you know, some animosity towards someone or something like that. It can, deity worship properly taken up, or chanting of the holy name properly taken up, along with deity worship and hearing from the scriptures, it can elevate one's consciousness. So that's what this text 25 is saying. Until that stage is reached, one should continue the activity until that stage is reached. So what's that stage? Where you see the Supreme Lord is seen within the heart of every living entity. And then we treat others accordingly. Krishna says similarly, Vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavihasini shuni chaiva sapakita pandita samadarshini. Pandita Samadarshana. The Pandit is a Samadarshi, and Krishna is also. Or one can see as Krishna sees. That means not you become Krishna, but you see living entities Samadarshi, Samadarshana, with equal vision. You see the distinctions, but you see the transcendental position. That's the emphasis. And then, appropriate activity according to the unique embodied situation of each soul. Nice. Very practical. So any discussion?
Yes? Maharaj, I want to ask on you said seeing the Lord in everybody's heart. So when we have regular dealings with people, we tend to forget this pretty often. I mean,
sure.
But me.
Sure.
So how to practically apply what to think when we are dealing with people so that it can remind us that, you know, Krishna is in everybody.
Well, I'll go back to, you know, the root of that realization comes from how you chant your japa every morning. Krishna consciousness starts in your bead bag, is my little phrase. So how do we get that? You do that. Nurture the water, the root, and then you get the flower. So the other is, you know, a mental adjustment that doesn't endure. Meaning, as Devahuti puts it, I get the philosophy. I'm paraphrasing. I get the philosophy. But the soul is so implicated, inextricably involved in matter. Even there's this knowledge thing. Knowledge, and then, you know, okay, knowledge, and then detachment, and I can, you know, think in terms of transcendental knowledge, but the pushing and pulling and the stirring of the material energy takes my attention away, and it's completely forgotten. So it comes from proper hearing and chanting, and gradually hearing and chanting means consciousness becomes cleansed. The world around you doesn't necessarily change, but consciousness inside can change. And every day, that the adherence to strong sadhana bhakti Super soul is within, and super soul is gives remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness, right? That's how we depend on Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness. So try to be, when you're in the day-to-day circumstances of life, try to cultivate the mood of being Krishna's servant in all the circumstances of life. So here comes, I'm walking down the road of life, and here comes a circumstance. And then you just stay fixed in that I wish to be engaged in Krishna's loving service. How to best engage in Krishna's loving service in the circumstance. That's, you know, how we see ourselves and our relationship with Krishna. Mood of humble service to Krishna. Now, if we're not humble, then circumstances are going to please us or displease us. You know, we're in that, just get pulled. Raga, dvesha, attraction, repulsion. Based on the sense subject and our sense of what happiness is, or honor and dishonor, or hot and cold, pleasure, pain. Instead of the relationship with Krishna of being his servant, and the nourishment galore for that consciousness, awaken that Krishna consciousness. It's something, a visual image for me is the seed has a hard shell. Because the hard shell is there, nothing goes in. It doesn't damage what's inside. But when you soften the seed by water, then that hard shell will soften, and the seed inside will start to grow and grow, and just, you know, the shell is gone, falls away. And then, you know, so it's the life that's inside that gets nourished, and that's what was needed. There's the conditioning aspect of our life, or conditioned, and then there's the spiritual aspect of our life. So we nourish the spiritual aspect of our life and grow it and grow it and grow it, and especially avoid offenses when chanting and continue chanting, aspire for Shuddha Nam. There's no better method. Then there's guidance in terms of practical activity, that the essence of those practical activities is the mood of service, and then appropriate for the circumstance. Cultivate that one, and it then becomes, you know, rather than simply struggle, it becomes transcendence. Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mamevini prapadyante mayametam tarantite. Be conscious of our position of surrendering to Krishna and being in his service always, 24/7. Even we live our lives that way, even our sleep will be like that. Generally our sleep is not like that, but even waking, sleeping, but because it's the life of the living entity, Krishna's service. Something else? Yes, Mahamantra.
It's very clear the bhakti is inclusive of all the other parts of meditation. But when it comes to yuga dharma of other ages, all the yuga dharmas are rendered as bhakti.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Precisely. Yes.
Mental offenses and mental sins. So mental sins are it will be forgiven, but not mental offenses. So the mind proposes so many things. I'm not able to discriminate actually what is mental sin and what is mental offenses. And also, I don't know whether whatever I heard is.
I think you asked this question last time I was here. Is this something? This must be something you struggle with. I'm not sure exactly what your question is. There's a dispensation in this age of Kali, in that we are not held responsible for mental offenses, but don't rely on that dispensation, because
what's in the mind, if not cleansed, will come out in the form of activity. By contemplation, eventually comes to the level of action. So you'll say something, do something that's based upon that contemplation. So there's not culpability or reaction for mental offense. So if I understood the specific question you asked correctly, mental offenses, it's considered, the distinction is, mental offenses, it doesn't come out in speech or action. It doesn't come through the working senses. It's the, you know, the sixth sense. But if it remains there, then it will come out. Then it's not just a mental offense, it's another kind, verbal or corporeal offense. Yeah, the classic is chapter 89 from 10th canto of Bhagavatam, where Bhrigu goes and makes mental offense, verbal offense, and corporeal offense. He doesn't offer his respect to Brahma, mental offense. He speaks something unpleasant to Lord Shiva, verbal offense. He kicks Lord Vishnu in the chest, corporeal offense. The mental is just within the mind. But, you know, then there's not a reaction, but it's in that category, by definition, which is what your question was. Where's the line between this and that? Does that address your question? Yes.
If at all somebody is feeling enmity towards somebody, but still knowing that it is not good.
Yeah.
Knowing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness.
So you turn your attention to Krishna. Then you turn your attention to Krishna and your mind will go to Krishna. Turn your attention to Krishna and Krishna, you know the condition. I'm dependent upon you. I know that this thought is an undesirable, impure thought. But it's there. So, please be kind upon me. Protect me from this thought. Carry my thoughts to you. You're the all-attractive. Please attract me to you and my thoughts to you. I'm helpless. I'm struggling with this material energy. See, it's... Same. You surrender to Krishna. Ma mevi prapadyante. You can cross beyond it. Otherwise, it's that, you know, it's that you and the mind, and mind wins. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I want to ask you that Prabhupada, and you also stress about, you know, chanting on the bees.
Mm.
What if you can do a certain number of
what if you do what?
Certain number of rounds on the beat, but cannot, complete all the rounds on the beat. Is chanting within your heart, or is it same as chanting on the beat, or?
The numerical chanting on beads element of chanting is for purpose of vrata, to take a vow. Oh, if your question is, does chanting not on beads, is that pleasing to Krishna? Is it beneficial for us? Does it count? It counts. It's beneficial. It's pleasing to Krishna. Then there's a vrata, and that has its place. And for example, as the primary example, is Namacharya Haridas Thakur. He made a vow, and he upheld his vow. Now, he was on a liberated platform. He didn't need a vow. But he made a vow and he upheld his vow as the Acharya. So as he did, and others in the line of disciplic succession did like that, they made vows and they upheld their vows for us. So it's for us. It's for our benefit. So it helps. And there's other reasons why beads are also helpful. By tactile contact, then the senses are also engaged, the sense of touch. Touch touching Tulsi. So we can give our reasons why On Beads has its support, additional benefit, aside from chanting. Like, you know, somebody engages in kirtan. That's chanting. Now, that person engages in kirtan may think, I chant. Why I don't need beads? Then you do what you can do to physical circumstances limiting. But you know, in response to the physical limitation, if Krishna sees the sincere desire in the heart of his devotee to carry out what the line of disciplic succession from Krishna is indicating, Krishna can easily change the circumstance. It may not happen right away, but circumstance can change when Krishna sees sincerity and determination. So if there is in fact circumstance, that rules. Circumstance rules. Mothers with children is a prime example. Somebody with ill health, prime example. Anyone else? Yes?
25th verse.
Yeah.
In the purport it's that you were reading, and it said that on home, when you're doing the offering to deity, you distribute the prasad. So, in practical ways, we are all at home doing the deity worship and do offering. How do we distribute the prasad outside?
In a regulated way, minimally. Meaning, find the ways and means, like we have, you have your weekly gatherings, you bring something from your home and distribute to the devotees. Find some ways and means, it may not come from your home, it may not be your deity in your home, it may be, may not be, but some way where you can assist in the public distribution of prasad, maybe through some function at the temple or something like that. Our nuclear family situation in modern times makes it very difficult. But there's ways and means, in principle. Vedic culture, people lived an agrarian economy, and in their home, they would have a deity. And Prabhupada said this. Vedic culture, after you prepare, you offer to your deity, you go to your doorstep and call out three times. Is there anyone who is hungry? Please come and take your meal before you eat. Now, you can do that here. Nothing can happen. So, how to put wheels and steering column on that one? So, some ways and some means. Collectively, individually, and collectively, let us engage in some prasadam distribution activity for the public. You have something?
No.
Yes.
Maharaj, in the verse before 24th, you talking about any
talks,
the saying the super soul in others.
Yeah.
Any also blocks realizations.
Yes.
I'm not free of envy.
Living entities in our embodied condition generally are not.
So, but still sometimes we do get some realizations.
Yeah.
So, how is that possible?
Well, it's just like, you know, the sun, sometimes there's a cloudy sky, sometimes it's a storm, and sometimes a clear sky. Sometimes envy is more prominent, sometimes less prominent. Well, no, just because of the movements of the material energy. Sometimes, you know, it's different. But you know, the tendency remains even when it may not be prominent. There may not be something prompting or provoking or irritating the tendency. When something comes, then some irritation comes, envy flares. You follow?
Yes. My question is, when that realization comes,
It's genuine. It's genuine. Don't dismiss it.
It's not irrevocable. Like, you know,
that's okay. That's okay. It, you know, the soul can be less covered, more covered. When the soul is less covered, Krishna is for mercy. Don't dismiss it. It doesn't. It's not lost. It's just covered. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatova. It's permanent. Permanent asset. Krishna's kindness is, however it comes in our life, it's a permanent asset. It doesn't maybe come forgotten and covered, but it doesn't go away. Okay, we'll end with that. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki.